It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling, dealing, limousine.
Well, it's a beat.
This is The Big Show with Matt and Zach.
Yeah, it's a big show. Oh. Crank it up, turn on them lights, turn them on.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into this week's edition of The Big Show with Matt and Zach. We're coming at you live from the beautiful and pretty much soaking wet downtown Dallas, Texas, as Tropical Storm Bill is making its way into the Metroplex. I am Zach Spears. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Ampson. Matt, what's up? How was your weekend?
Dude, it was good. You know, I got to admit, I finally got out on the mythical Buffalo Creek Golf Course.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and I got to tell you.
We've talked a lot about it on the show. Just none of us have ever meandered over there to it.
Yeah, and I finally made it. And so I walk in. I ask the guy at the front desk there for a couple large buckets of balls for the wife and I to go out to the range and get a little practice in, because I'm going to be playing there this coming weekend. And I figure before going hit 18, I might want to try to hit a bucket of balls. The guy kind of gave me a funny look, and he's like, "Well, aren't you a member here?" And I'm like, "No, not so much." He's like, "You realize for, you know, it's going to be like $20 for two large buckets of balls." And I'm like, "Eh, it's about standard going rate." And he's like, "For $29 a month, you get unlimited range access. You get half price 18 holes after 1 p.m. You get free golf lessons and all this other stuff." And I'm like, sold.
Yeah.
Now, if the sun will come out more frequently and give me some good weather to play golf,
you can get your money's worth.
I got an unlimited membership
right
now, so I'm in.
Can you bring guests?
We'll figure it out. So I asked the guy. Like, I literally asked the guy this. And I'm like, "Well, is this per person or per household?" And he kind of gave me the, yeah.
Yeah.
So he charged me, and me and Amy went and hit unlimited balls just on my dime. So
nice. So just $29 a month. You and Amy, me, can go golfing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if I were to tell you, I went off to a place this weekend over the last 5 days where there was no internet, terrible tropical weather, like weather so bad that it knocked out the television at some point every single day, even at the beginning of game 5 on Sunday night. An airplane that got me there was so small that I had to sit in the back of the airplane for takeoff and then was told to move to the front once we got in the air. I ate just once a day and never slept in the same place twice in that five-day stretch while I was located in this area. Where would you think I was? Because that all happened to me this weekend. Where do you think I would be?
Yeah, I'd be picking, like, Jamaica,
no,
Haiti, Dominican Republic.
I was where you sent me this week for work in Peoria, Illinois.
Oops.
Yes, and all of that happened, like literally all of that happened. I had no internet. I was so disconnected from the world. The airplane store, was nuts. They came up to me and were like, "Sir, could you sit in the back for takeoff?" I was like, "What are we, out in Cambodia, like hopping islands and whatnot?" But, yeah, so I spent the entire weekend in Central Illinois, and I spent the better part of the last 48 hours trying to get out and barely made it back to Dallas before this storm's hit. If not, I was most likely going to have to stay there for another week, which would have been terrible. Today we'll talk NBA Finals here on the Big Show with Matt and Zach, as always presented to you by Clay Cooley Nissan of South Austin. Call Mark at 903-520-0800. Of course, we'll talk NBA Finals. The Stanley Cup has now been completed. Major League Baseball. We'll talk some football and everything else sports related. Plus, we'll throw some chin music, draw lines in the sand, call our shots, and we'll start with free throws.
Let's talk about your most memorable free throw tradition. You know, a lot of people have certain routines. They'll hit the side of their face, hit their chest.
Free throw, my goodness.
I'm not sure what that was. Good Lord.
So we got audio drops now, apparently.
Woo,
so I think that was kind of cool. Yeah, so that sounded good. So start us off, Matt, with your free throws.
All right, so my first one. We got the U.S. Open teeing off this weekend. Now, normally majors, we'd probably talk a little about who are the favorites, but this one's a little bit more near and dear to me. This is actually taking place just outside of Seattle, University Place at Chambers Bay. This site has really been under construction for this major for over 4 years. right after the majors play this weekend. What a lot of people don't know, they're going to be putting a hotel, a casino. Like, this is going to be a big draw for the city ongoing, even though it probably won't host a lot of other PGA events. They've done a phenomenal job building out this course. I'm really excited to see how the course plays. The first pictures I've seen of it so far, while Seattle's been a little bit dry, they've let the kind of side fescue grow up. It kind of looks like something you'd see at a British Open of, long-running fairways with tall rough and fescue on the side. And, they would listen to Rory McIlroy. If you're a bomber and can hit it long, you're going to be in for a good weekend. If not, you're going to be in for a long weekend because it's going to be tough. So excited to watch the U.S. Open this weekend. Second one, Katie Strang wrote a great piece on ESPN.com last night, early this morning, on Kimmo Tiiminen. If you aren't familiar, he was traded to the Blackhawks in February from the Flyers, or a late-round pick and, some other things. He's 40 years old. This was his last season. He said, I'm going for it. I've had a long career. This is it, last year. So I want to finish with a playoff team. Obviously, the Blackhawks got in. We'll talk more about how the Cup finished up last night. But they ended up winning. And after they scored the second goal, the camera, if you watch closely, you can see Tiiminen and it starts to cry on the bench. The Stanley Cup means so much to these players. Not just, it's not just about winning the title, but having your name etched on the cup and in history. And they sacrifice so much. When Jonathan Toews took the cup, the first person he handed it to was Kimmo Tiiminen. And it really threw me back to 2001 when Ray Bourque, one of the legendary players of the game in the 90s, and for that matter, even in the 80s, was traded to the Avalanche. They went on, Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg carry the team to win the Stanley Cup, and they hand it to him, in kind of a ceremonious fashion.
That's Patrick Wall's team, right?
Exactly. Like, and normally that's one. You hand to the goaltender, you'd hand to a Patrick Kane, right, your assistant. But they did it to honor him for a guy who spent 20 years in the league, sacrificing every year, that finally was given an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. And his name will now be etched for eternity on the Stanley Cup. So congratulations to him.
And Stanley Cup brings up tons of interesting and funny points, as we'll get to later in the show when we talk the Stanley Cup. But yes, that is an all-time sports trophy and sports award. It means so much to all those people. And a guy able to play 20 years in hockey is a testament, because that's no easy game.
No.
And it's a grown man sport. My free throws, I spent the last weekend in Illinois. And I'm a big LeBron James fan, and I had to watch two LeBron James basketball games while I was there in the NBA Finals. And it occurred to me, people in Illinois hate LeBron James, and I know why after being there all weekend. One, he kills the Bulls every single year in the playoffs. The Bulls have never beaten LeBron James out of the finals, and he murders them every year.
Yep.
The Bulls' fan favorite is Joakim Noah, and Joakim Noah and LeBron James have a well-documented hatred for each other. And LeBron is also challenging Michael Jordan for greatness and what most would consider to be the best all time. These people are scared that they're coming for their all-time Bulls great. People in Illinois are sports-rich fans. They love their sports, love their Blackhawks, love their Cubs, White Sox, and the Bears and the Bulls, and obviously Michael Jordan. And they're scared that LeBron is going to chase him down and achieve this greatness, and it's really handicapping them, hindering them from accepting this greatness and witnessing what the rest of the world is able to do. But they should be scared, because LeBron is that good. And it doesn't help any that in these finals alone for the Warriors, Andre Iguodala is from Springfield, Illinois, and Sean Livingston was drafted out of high school from Peoria High School in Peoria, Illinois. And so all of these things play into the fact that LeBron James is hated by them. I had said to me three different times this weekend by three different people, you're literally the only person I know that likes LeBron James. So, people of Illinois, I would venture that you get out of your state every once in a while and talk sports with people, because there's a lot of people in the world that like LeBron James.
Sure.
Not only like LeBron James, but honor him as being one of the all-time greats.
Yep.
My second free throw. This comes from a deep sentimental place, and a lot of hurt and a lot of pain went into this weekend. Jurassic World, the new movie coming out, which is...
you probably saw it then.
No,
one of the crappy movies that you love to see, the premiere, opening, midnight showing, you're there.
No, you sound like my girlfriend, and I'm very disappointed in her, because I grew up in the 90s. She did not. She wasn't born until the 90s. And I grew up on Jurassic Park movies, and I enjoy them. And who doesn't want to see a massive, like, whale shark slash crocodile jump out of the water and stuff? And she told me, specifically Friday night, after all day Thursday, she told me we were going to go Friday night. She called me Friday and said we couldn't go because it wasn't realistic because of the CGI graphics is what she had been told. I said, what the hell are you talking about? It's dinosaurs in 2015. None of it's realistic. We're going to see the movie. But the woman always wins, and we didn't go see the movie. And apparently my girlfriend was the only person who didn't want to see it, and she may have been the only person in the entire world that was told the graphics were bad because the movie set world records for most money made in a weekend. Over $530 million was grossed by Jurassic World this weekend. And since Friday, they've already signed a contract to film a sequel to Jurassic World. This movie has killed it. And I can't go see the movie anytime soon because I'm in the middle of a move of apartments. Every night when LeBron and them aren't playing, I'm packing stuff up and moving it into my new place. I can't see the movie for another week. So thanks to her, I have not seen the best movie in the world. I'm a huge movie buff. That
might as well
me.
Wait till it comes out on cable now.
Oh, man. Lord. Lord. So those are free throws. It was a great weekend. A lot of Illinois storylines there, unfortunately.
I know. But let's be honest. If you'd gone to it, maybe the power would have gone out.
Yeah.
Maybe that experience, maybe this is for the better.
Yeah.
Long term.
Yeah.
Reagan's got to be right on this.
Yeah. Don't tell her that. She actually listens to the show. She may be one of our only listeners, but she listens to the show, and she was very pleased. And every time she saw an ad for Jurassic World or something popped up telling us how good Jurassic World was and the money it made, she would just turn and laugh at me and show it to me. So she was rubbing it in. Now, she may be up for this next award, Jackass of the Week, from preventing me from going to see the movie, but I'm not going to do that to her.
All right.
We are going to nominate David Blatt,
okay,
the Cleveland Cavaliers coach,
okay,
for not playing Timofey Mozgov more than 9 minutes. One game after, he had 28 points and 10 rebounds in 33 minutes played for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you agree with this assessment of David Blatt being the Jackass of the Week? Ooh. Brought to us by Top Tickets USA.
I got to tell you, I got two other nominees,
okay,
and then we're going to have to debate this one out.
Let's hear them.
My number one nominee, obviously David Blatt, as you know. Number two, the Stanley Cup chauffeur.
Yes.
Who, you know, I got to give all the credit to Zach Spears here, because I was trying to figure out, as they were talking pregame, oh, we're going to bring the cup in later. Like, no, I'm like, normally it's in the building. Like, that's part of the aura of, hey, cup's here. Like, it might come out. Like, we may not start shining it till the third period, but I couldn't figure out. Well, come to find out, as my good friend and co-host here, Zach Spears, was hung up due to weather, so was the Stanley Cup
in the same state. Thanks a lot, Matt.
It couldn't make it, and it was delayed on their flight. They tried to get it in. Once they got it in, then it couldn't make it through the traffic of downtown Chicago. So the Stanley Cup chauffeur, you're getting an F here on the night when it should be awarded. It was delayed actually getting out onto the ice to present it to the team. That's got to be a nominee.
I like that. One more thing about the David Blatt. Mozgov, the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals are +6 while he's on the floor.
Okay.
-41 when he's off the floor.
Ooh.
But Stanley Cup chauffeur, you got one job all year long, and that's to get the cup to the place on nights when the cup can be won.
All right. One more nominee.
Okay, bring it.
Cam Newton. No, the guy just signed a $100 million contract.
Yeah.
Why would he be a Jackass of the Week? If you've seen the video, if anyone's familiar with knockerball, you put essentially a big bubble on around yourself and go run and kind of play soccer, and then you can bounce into each other, and it's all fun games and laughing around. The dude lowered the boom on a kid who looked like he was about 13. Full speed, Cam Newton running over this little white kid. Blew him apart. Literally, his cleats flew off as he launched this kid. And Cam Newton goes and celebrates, throws his bubble off of, and looks like he's Patrick Willis blowing somebody up. Like, go hit somebody your own size if you wanted to. Like, if you went and knocked down, I don't know.
Yeah.
Pick somebody.
A grown man.
Pick one of your teammates. You did that to Luke Kuechly?
Yeah.
All right, I'm applauding. I'm like, that's a great video. You do it to a 13-year-old little white kid, and you're 6'4", 240? I'm not feeling this so much, Cam.
Heisman Trophy winner.
Beyond the point of, like, you just got a $100 million contract, why are you even playing knockerball?
Yeah. I can't feel good about awarding Cam Newton Jackass of the Week for that, because when you sent it to me yesterday, it said, hey, this should be a Jackass of the Week nominee, I laughed hysterically at it. I thought it was hilarious. And I do think if, for some reason, someone wanted to put video cameras on us, and we'd break the video cameras, but if they did, We could show that video. It could perhaps be a nominee. It's really tough doing that over, okay, over video.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Stanley Cup chauffeur because you have one job, get it there. And they said Doc Emmerich was on the Dan Patrick Show today, the announcer for NHL Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He's the voice of hockey.
Yeah.
He said that the Stanley Cup arrived just 5 minutes before we saw it on ice. That's how late it was. Like, they literally pulled up into the parking lot, got it out of there, and walked it straight to the ice for the celebration, where this thing should be there for any game that is eligible to be there. We all know back in 1938 when the Blackhawks won in Chicago, the Stanley Cup wasn't there either because the commissioner at the time had a little hatred for the Chicago Blackhawks, and he did not believe the Blackhawks stood a chance to beat Toronto that night. And so he said, don't waste the traveling of the cup there. It won't be won tonight. Just wait for game 7. Blackhawks went on to win. The cup wasn't there either. So Blackhawks have a unique history with the Stanley Cup, and it's missing. I'm awarding the Jackass of the Week to the Stanley Cup chauffeur. I wonder if anything else will come out about that, if we ever find out those people's names, what really truly did happen, where were the hiccups and the mess-ups with the weather and the traffic, and if those people lose their jobs and whatnot. Jackass of the Week is brought to you by Top Tickets USA. Call Chris for all your sports and entertainment needs. I love Jackass of the Week. It's a great, great spot. We're going to go ahead and grab a break here, and we'll be right back. We'll talk some NBA Finals after this.
A history filled with tradition and excellence, passed on by those who came before us. The legacy is what drives us and brings us to the dawn of a new era. Future is now. Be there for the next chapter of Boston College basketball. Get your tickets now.
Welcome back in. This is The Big Show with Matt and Zach. I'm Zach Spears. That's Matt Amston coming at you live Tuesday night from downtown Dallas, Texas. We have awesome television on tonight, which is Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Game 4 and 5 have happened since we last spoke to everyone here on air, Matt, and since we've spoken with a microphone in front of us. Where we left it last time was, if you're a LeBron James fan or Cavaliers fan, you felt really good. Cavs are up 2-1 and LeBron was rolling. Game four on Thursday night, we saw LeBron James kind of come back down to earth, but still a triple-double. And didn't play near as many minutes because the Warriors switched up their lineup and were able to enforce their will, smaller lineup, get up and down the floor, and really change the pace and momentum of that basketball game.
Yeah, I think you and I were texting back and forth during the game. One of the things that was really apparent from the very first quarter was the kind of lack of energy, hustle, and really just didn't even look like Cleveland wanted to be there. You know, it was very apparent just in their body language, whether that was...
I thought they were really tired, too.
Yeah, whether it was three games, you know, with one day off in between versus the 2 days off, it was just, you could tell that they were in for a long night. And so beyond the statistics, just looking purely at that body of work in game four, it was like, this thing in trouble. Well, then you go and dig in, and it's like Matthew Dellavedova, 3 of 14, J.R. Smith, 2 of 12. Like, the entire supporting cast did not play well, except for who you mentioned earlier, Mozgov. You know, he was great, had, 28 points, 10 boards, 6 of them offensive rebounds, so he was really working hard on the glass. And so that's where you started to kind of think, okay, maybe if they can start to have some semblance of a good 1-2 punch with LeBron and Mozgov here going into game 5, I think we got something setting up here. So game 4 for me, I was like, well, let's chalk it up. You know, they were a little fatigued. They had a 2-1. Maybe they let off the gas a little bit. They're going to go back. What were your thoughts on game 4?
Do you think they wasted a perfectly good opportunity? I know you're tired, but like you said, they kind of gave out that we are tired, we're mentally weak here, we don't want to be here. That's on your home floor. You got to win.
I totally agree. I
feel like they wasted an opportunity there, and I do feel like you mentioned a little bit in passing. Dele shot them out of that game. I think, and it happens all the time, and it happens to, you know, players at all different levels, usually the ones who are a little bit more prepared and have dealt with their own press clippings a little bit more than others, don't necessarily let their own press clippings and their own headlines get to them. I think Dele did. And it would be tough not to, you know, showing up at the arena and people are selling bobbleheads with you on it, your jersey's being sold for the first time in your entire life, and you've never heard your name on Colin Cowherd or Dan Patrick before or Bomani Jones, all their shows, and you're the leading topic. You're the number one trending thing in the world. I feel like it'd be really tough not to do that. And then we move to Game 5 where the game shifts back to Golden State as the NBA Finals go two at home, two on the road, and then they alternate back and forth until they come back to Game 7 at the overall number one seed, which is in Oakland. Game 5 was back in Oakland, and we saw the series was tied 2-2. LeBron, the storyline for me was LeBron was unreal again, and Curry showed up late and had 37. And Curry hasn't played particularly well in the series. His numbers are all right until you get to his percentages and stuff like that. But LeBron's percentages aren't that great, but his stats are just off the charts. Also, Golden State, again, set the tone and the pace. And I was surprised that the Cavaliers were able to stay with Golden State as long as they did. And they even had a lead in the fourth quarter. LeBron hit knocked down a big-time three, and him and Curry were trading blows up and down the floor for a while there. And the Cavs even had a lead in the fourth. Like I said, the way that the Golden State was setting the pace and scoring so much, it's really tough for the Cavaliers to keep up with that with Love and Kyrie out. And LeBron, you know, his game's not built on offense. It's built on developing offense and helping people on defense and scoring when he can. LeBron's being forced to score 37 yeah. points a game where, you know, LeBron most nights could come out and have 20 and the team wins by 15.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're depending on getting all these points for LeBron, it's going to be tough to keep up and score with a team like Golden State with your two other best scores out, and J.R. Smith has always been so inconsistent. Iman Shumpert looks tentative at times, and Dellavedova is just shooting terrible shots all over the place, and he's not built to score in this league either. What'd you take away from Game 5 just to start with?
Yeah, I mean, going on Game 5, you know, it was interesting. Golden State, and credit to Kerr, went with a very similar strategy. We're going to go small. We're going to put Iggy in. We're going to play tough defense, and we're going to try to force tempo really early and get out in transition just to make Cleveland uncomfortable mm-hmm. and start to get a pace. And even if it comes back down from that a little bit, we aren't starting the game, okay, let's walk up the court. Let's walk back down the court. And that's what happened in Game 2 and 3 when Cleveland really kind of took control yeah. and just you felt like they were suffocating Golden State was they were dictating pace of play. You know, they may try to push and get a three, and then they pick the ball up and just yeah. walk it down. And
they don't try to force that fast break stuff or skip a pass.
Right.
To, you know, instead of hitting LeBron outside the three-point line on the defensive rebound, you know, he's 6 feet from it, you're jumping everyone to Dele or jumping everyone to J.R. Smith, who's past half court and creating the fast break. That's what Golden State loves to do.
Right.
And I felt like the Cavs were falling into that a lot.
I totally agree. And that's where we saw, you know, Blatt immediately pivot and bring Mozgov out, I think 3 or 4 minutes into the game, and say, okay, we're going to go small as well. We're just going to play, we're going to try to play at this pace, at this tempo, and, you know, not to agree, you know, we're going to score 120 each and just back and forth, you know, bombing threes, but we're going to play faster. Right, we're not going to go big and try to play post and, you know, inside out offense here. We're still going to ISO with LeBron. We're going to try to get J.R. Smith back into some rhythm here, and he hit his first two threes. And you're like, okay, if they got a, you know, him hitting decent from outside and getting open looks and kicking to Shumpert and kicking to Jones, okay, we might have something. The game, in my perspective, didn't really develop fully into that. J.R. Smith finished 5 of 15 and 4 of 14 on threes. So yeah, he hit his first two, then he went 2 of 12 the rest of the way. So that actually didn't develop the rest of the game as I think you probably hoped when he hit those first two. And the pace of the game continued to favor the Warriors the entire time. If you I went back, and you know some of this will go into our Game 6 and what we're looking forward to. Cleveland shooting under 40%. Like, they're shooting horrible. And a team like that, they need to keep this at between 80 and 90 points and put their big men in to pound the glass. Just really get after
it. And where was their big man?
Sitting on the bench, giving high fives to Blasey. Walked yeah. by. Good game,
Mozgov, as we mentioned, 9 minutes in that game. We're real quick on that. I understand David Blatt's reasoning there. you've got to be able to keep up with the other team up and down the floor because they're going to do that. Mozgov lacks lateral side-to-side quickness, can't keep up with those little guys. But that's fine. You have two of the only seven-footers in the entire series that can run and chew bubblegum at the same time.
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson's very able to play all his minutes, but switch them out. Fresh bodies, fresh looks, different things that they both do. Mozgov only played 9 minutes in this game. The Cavaliers still won the rebound battle in Game 5. It was the first time all postseason they won the rebound but lost the basketball game. So really weird stat. And I thought the big turning point in this game for me when the Cavs took a big risk by taking LeBron out with 2 minutes left in the third. When that happened, I said to myself, I don't like this. They were only up two. Mm-hmm. And with 2 minutes left, the Warriors, we've seen all year long, especially in this series alone, all playoffs, they can go on to score and run quick. And they were able to extend their lead from 2-6 going into the fourth quarter. So LeBron's back on the floor, not down two, he's down six. Six is a lot of points in the fourth quarter of a basketball game to beat down by. Your fourth quarters, you're going to see most of your scoring in the game
right.
as far as quarter by quarter wise, but the other team's going to score just as much as you are typically.
Right.
Down six, you're having to overcome a lot. And we've seen in desperate situations this series alone with Cavs have needed to score stretches of points and haven't scored anything at all. The overtimes. Remember, they hit one field goal in, or hit two field goals in the combined two overtimes in Game 1 and Game 2, and were able to go 1-1 in those games. That's a big deficit to overcome in any postseason game, let alone the NBA Finals on the road. Did you have a certain turning point in Game 5 that you said, okay, this game is definitely going Golden State's way?
For me, it was, you know, and I don't want to just continue to pile on to the Cavaliers,
yeah.
right? And we do need to recognize Golden State played very well. And what Steve Kerr's done, the way he's manipulated his lineup and the roster he's put out there, I think has given Blatt fits because Blatt doesn't have the depth to counter with anything, you know, and so he's really handcuffed here. Steph Curry played really well.
It was nice for the MVP to finally show up. MVP, I say in quotations, show up almost six games into the NBA Finals. Finally had a Curry game, as you would say, and it really wasn't much until the fourth quarter. And it must be nice to be on a team like that where you don't have to show up until almost six games in,
yeah.
and everything's been handled for you and you're in the driver's seat to win the NBA championship.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think it was maybe three or four threes in the fourth quarter, but when he and LeBron started going back and forth and he answered every run that they made with another
mm-hmm.
dagger, and another dagger, that really just put this game away where you're like, damn, that chalk this one up to Golden State. Now, let's see if Golden State can replicate that. That's what they haven't done a lot this series, is go from one game of like, hey, we're playing well, we're going to bring it the next one. You know, that's where I think game one, Klay Thompson, you know, shot the ball well, then he was bad game two. Then Curry got better, then he got worse. Like, they've been very Jekyll and Hyde, and that's part of the way they go about their season, is we want to shoot a high volume of shots because we know law of averages, we're going to get our points. Game two and three, they didn't allow them to hit those averages, and they shrunk the quantity of opportunities. And so they really limited them into a back-and-forth high-scoring game, and that's when the Cavs were most successful.
Yeah, and, you know, when the game is played at the Cavs' pace, which is, you know, like I said, a slower pace, and the game is under 90 points, we'll say, and
mm-hmm.
it's really the barometer for success in this series for the Cavs that they're able to hold the Warriors under 90 points in four quarters. A great LeBron game can keep the Cavs in these when the Warriors are scoring under 90 points. LeBron's averaging 37, 12, and 9 per game in the series. And the games where they've been able to keep the Warriors under 90 are the two games in the four quarters are the two games that they've won and the games that they've been in late. The Cavs' defensive effort has not been the same since the first quarter of Game 4 in Cleveland. Would you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, so something needs to be done there. I don't know if that comes with exhaustion. Probably they got tired after the first quarter in Game 4. Obviously, that affects you in the mind as well as physically, and then weren't in the momentum to keep that going in Oakland because the game just started off at Golden State's pace. They're on the road and weren't able to get back into it, hopefully getting back into Cleveland. Tonight, as a basketball fan, you want to see a Game 7 push. As a LeBron fan, I obviously want to see him play well and the Cavaliers win. But hopefully for basketball fans' sake and Cavaliers fans' sake, that Cavs can get back into Cleveland, have their fans and everybody juice them up tonight and get a win moving forward. And then all that being said, as we shift to Game 6 tonight, yeah, which is right after us here on air. The Cavs still have a shot to win this game. Game 6 is in Cleveland tonight.
Yeah.
And if they win that, they still have a shot to go into Game 7 on the road, where they have played well all year. The best games of the series have been played there besides their win in Cleveland. And they were one of two teams to beat Golden State at Golden State,
mm-hmm,
in the regular season.
Yep.
So they played well in Golden State all year. You got to feel good if the Cavaliers win this game tonight. Obviously, they have to take care of business tonight. Moving forward to Friday night, that they could come away with an NBA title.
Yeah, I think it just depends which Cavs team we have. I think
tonight
is, you know, obviously do or die for them. I hope to see them come out, play with high intensity. One of the interesting things, as you alluded to, on the defensive front is because they're playing with so many different unique lineups, it's interesting seeing how often they're confused on defense, that they have blown assignments, someone doesn't slide over to help. I think they're just so used to, oh, okay, Tristan's going to come over, or, oh, hey, Mozgov's got my back. Oh, wait, no, that was LeBron over there now. So, oh, I forgot, I should slide over. Like, I'm hoping that whatever plan they have going forward, they get some of these kinks of these weird rosters and rotations they're throwing out there together worked out, and they get a lot less breakdowns. So I wrote down three keys to the game from my perspective for the Cavs to stay in this game and have a shot to win this game. So number one is they must keep Golden State under 40% from three. Every game where they're over 40%, they win. When they're under, they've lost. The second one, ball movement. We saw this, you know, on and off. There's times where it's just, we're going to go stand in the corner and let LeBron do whatever. There was times even in game 5 where they had phenomenal ball movement. It's flying around the perimeter. It's inside. It's outside. And then you get wide open looks because they're breaking down the defense who's playing run and chase all over the place. And I think that will start to wear down Golden State if they consistently do it. The last one is what you alluded to earlier. They got to win on the glass. This is a team that when they've leveraged Mozgov and Thompson together in there, Golden State can't match the size and physicality of those guys getting after the boards. And I think it also wears down those guys trying to defend them and gets them into foul trouble and to the free throw line via penalty much earlier in the quarters that I think benefits Cleveland greater. If they can do those things, I think that's the path for Cleveland to go get a victory tonight.
Yeah, all great points. I would agree. I'm just still in shock. I can't believe the Cavs are even still in this series. Playing, and not only in this, but playing the game so closely and you know, playing well for the most part. LeBron James playing spectacular. I can't believe they still have a shot to win this. This is a testament to what LeBron's doing and his overall greatness. You know, he had 40, 14, and 11 on Sunday night, and 11 of those assists produced 31 points.
Hmm.
And there was, I believe, it was the third quarter, I believe, he either scored or assisted on every single point in the entire quarter.
All 17.
Yeah, so obviously another recipe for success. You know, you say all those things. LeBron has to play well. LeBron has to have a LeBron game, a triple double or near triple double with over 30 points for them to even have a shot in Game 6. And then, you know, Game 6 tonight, do you see the Cavaliers winning? This game is at home. This is a great opportunity for them to make up for their hiccup, you know, a week ago when they had Game 4 at home, a chance to go up 3-1 to take it back to Oakland to win the series. They kind of just flopped out there and didn't take advantage. They have the chance here. Now, think about this, too. They win Game 6 tonight, and we could all be saying this for nothing because they could very well go out there and lose. They win Game 6 tonight, they get an extra day's rest for primetime television on Friday night on ABC. Game 7 will be on Friday instead of Thursday, which benefits LeBron and the Cavs. But that all needs to be put by the wayside. Everybody's tired now. Both basketball teams are tired. Referees are tired. Coaches, trainers, and media. Everyone's tired.
Yep.
You're jumping three time zones here the last few days.
Yep.
Jumping back and forth over three time zones. You know, Warriors and games that are in Cleveland are getting to the arena for shoot around at 10 or 11 in the morning their time.
Yep.
Where the Cavaliers are tipping the game, you know, finishing the game at midnight, 1 o'clock their time when they're playing over in Oakland. A lot of stuff to be played in here. What do you see happening tonight in Cleveland?
My original prediction was the Cavs were going to win in 7, so I got to stick by hoping that the Cavs can come through with some sort of miracle tonight getting win. I think this game will be really close.
Yeah.
Previously I think I felt good about them playing at home, but we've seen the role players that Cleveland's having to put out there right now not answer the bell under
pressure.
You need
the roster in front of you to see who some of these guys are.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, I think everyone after game one and two speculated, could a Mike Miller step up? Could a James Jones step up? Those guys haven't. You know, they've had plenty of, you know, minutes and opportunities. They seem to be really shying away of just pass the ball, get it out of my hands. So it's going to be on the backs of Tristan Thompson, Mozgov, LeBron, and J.R. Smith. And a little bit of Deli not doing anything dumb, right? And J.R. Smith not doing making dumb fouls. Like, I think if those guys can put it together and put 95 points on the board, I think they can win if they play great defense.
My whole thing is, everyone play the best D of your lives tonight and get out of the way. Let LeBron do his thing for the first two and a half, three quarters. When everyone starts collapsing on him, and they will, they may do it earlier than that, but they seem to be okay with LeBron scoring a ton of points. When they start helping out LeBron, because LeBron's keeping them in the game on offense,
kick,
knocking down your shots when the opportunity. But do not do anything stupid. Just play hard and tough defense like you did the first two and a half game, three games, and then let LeBron do everything for you. Because as he said in his press conference, he's the greatest player in the world. He's got confidence in his team because he knows what his guys can do, but also he's the best player in the world. Why should he not be confident? So my thoughts here, and I want to get your thoughts, because I was totally indifferent on this after game two. Do the Cavaliers win the series with Love and Irving? Because I said originally with just Irving, I thought the Cavaliers would be better off without just Irving. In the first two games with Deli out there, they were. They seemed to be better off.
Yep.
But now you're getting absolutely nothing out of Dellavedova on the offensive end. He's still playing pretty good defense on Curry, but now we're starting to see Curry get out of that slump and score points, which he would do on Kyrie Irving. So it's like you're getting the same thing out on defense that you would out of Irving.
Right.
Just Irving's not going to put any effort into defense where Dellavedova does, and Curry's starting to knock down jumpers and getting some open looks through creation of offense from the Warriors' offense. But adding in Love with Kyrie Irving, do the Cavaliers win the series?
I mean, that is a million-dollar question.
And it's the big what if.
Yeah, it's a tough one to answer. I agree. I think I agreed with you and was really on the pedestal of the banged-up Kyrie we had. Dellavedova was a better defender on Curry, which he showed in game two and three, and then we had the full body cramp incident. Right, and that's hard to recover from, and I don't think he'll ever be back to 100% this entire series. That's something you need a couple weeks.
Football players take a week or two off from everything after that.
Exactly. And so, I mean, he's come back and he's gutted through this, but I think it's also impacting his offensive ability. You know, drive the lane, little finger rolls and jump shot. You don't have the same leg burst you did before. You kind of just seem really pushing with a lot of arm. And some of those shots are just ugly, which being a, Gonzaga guy, I've seen too many Matthew Dellavedova threes when he was with St. Mary's for 17 years. It felt like the kid never graduated.
He's one of those kids.
Oh, unbelievable. So if Kyrie's in there, Kyrie can score with Curry, right? I mean, that's a guy that you're like, okay, you hit a three, me and LeBron will come down and bang one right behind you. With Love also in there, I think this team is able. If you want to go up-tempo, fine, we'll come score with you. And I think they're one of those teams that could play both slow and then, fine, you want to double, I'm going to kick out to Love. Who are you going to put out on Love? Are you going to put Iggy out there? Fine. Who are you going to put on LeBron? Harrison Barnes? Like, they become a real matchup problem when you have all three of those. Now everyone's like, well, just collapse on LeBron and force somebody else to beat us because based on the way they're shooting, they won't.
Yeah. My thoughts are, I do think the Cavaliers win the series, and the series may already be over with Love and Irving.
Wow.
Both of them are going to add in 17 to 25 points apiece.
Yeah.
Plus, LeBron would be able to fall into his natural role of scoring some points, but also playing defense, giving everyone else the opportunity to be a better basketball player. And it doesn't put near as much pressure on the Cavaliers' role players. I think the Cavaliers win the series with Love and Irving, where with just Irving earlier in the series, last week I was completely different. I thought the Cavs would be better off just for this series alone with Deli because of the way he was playing defense and locking up Curry. And he was also helping on the offensive end. So that was our NBA Finals there. And when we come back from the break, we will actually dive into a little bit more Stanley Cup, update you on that, and then play a little game we like to call Chin Music.
Hey guys, Clay Cooley here with Clay Cooley Nissan, the number one Nissan dealer in Texas. We're offering new Altimas for only $16,995. Or what about a Sentra for $13,995? Or how about a new Versa for $11,995? That's right, everything must go. And remember, I'm always going to give you more for your trade to get you that low payment you're looking for. Shop me first, shop me last. Either way, come see Clutch.
No disrespect to nobody, but we run this ish.
I'm the man up in this beach. I run shit. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Excellent is my prison. Wrong night, I perform like Mike. Anyone, Tyson, Jordan, Jackson, Axon. Old school, new school, need to learn them.
Dummies, you ain't said nothing. Don't make me have to call your name out.
What do you think about that, man? Turntablism, is it okay?
I scratch my head every time I hear the name right now, and I try to get a dictionary and try to find a word that what he's doing right now, and I'm just lost for words. I mean, he's amazing. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know if it's not another guy in the league that can accomplish some of the things that he's doing right now.
Tune to the greatest.
All right, everybody, welcome in. This is the Big Show with Matt and Zach. I'm Zach Spears. That's Matt Amston. Thanks for jumping back in with us after the break. Hope you enjoyed the break as much as we did. A little halftime break there. Kidding. It was only like a minute and a half. We didn't have much time to do anything. Anyway, we talked some Stanley Cup so far. Did our Jackass of the Week, which was won by the Stanley Cup chauffeurs. And that leads us into this topic, which is the Stanley Cup has been completed and finished. Hockey is done for the year. The Chicago Blackhawks win their third title in 6 years, dating back to 2010, becoming the latest and greatest professional sports dynasty. Matt, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I'm not going to take it too far. I think they are a phenomenal team of the era. I mean, no question. It is a tough task to get back to the playoffs every year. It is a tough task to get back to a, you know, championship series of your respective sport every year. And I think, you know, I wrote this down last night. We are so prisoners of the moment. You know, if we went back to the first Stanley Cup they won, you said, oh, this team is going to win and go so far. And then the next year they get bounced in, I think, the first round. And you're like, oh, they suck. Fire them all. Get rid of the coach. And then the next year, oh, they're back in the finals. Like, oh, great. And
the greatest team ever.
And a couple years of just subpar. And then this year they win again. And now we're like, oh, dynasty. You know, but every year, you know, we're like, have such high expectations for this team. And they keep living up to them. And, you know, it's really hard to do. And the playoff structure of the NHL makes it even that much more challenging of playing 5-7-game series over the course of 2.5 months.
Like basketball, they're long, drawn out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just brutal. And for how physical these games are, it is a war of attrition that, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, and teams just break down and can't do it. And so to keep, you know, a lot of these core components together over this entire run, Taves, Kane, Crawford, Duncan, yeah, Keith, Seabrook, like, that's hard to do in, you know, the free agency world we're in, where you got to pay your stars, and to continue to add pieces around them or make trades at trade deadlines to go win, to get those cups. Like, I got to give, you know, both the coaching staff that stayed together as well as the front office a lot of credit for being able to do this over really a short period of time. When we think about kind of the historic nature that this is, are they one of the greatest dynasties? Not necessarily, but this is hard to do in today's era of sports.
And the Blackhawks are going to have their hands full. They got a lot of valuable pieces, and as you said, free agency looms just a few weeks away, and there will be plenty of suitors ready to hire off a lot of those Chicago Blackhawks players, and rightfully so. They obviously experienced in the postseason, know how to win. They all seem like they really enjoy their jobs and love playing the game of hockey, which is good to wake up every day and love your job. And Chicago won the Cup for the first time at home since when? When was that?
1938,
which was the other no Stanley Cup appearance conspiracy. So, like, probably the only two times Chicago's ever won the Cup in Chicago, they've never had the Cup there right away for the Stanley Cup celebration, which is the best part of winning the Stanley Cup, is having the celebration of the kissing of the Cup and passing it along to everyone. Luckily, last night it was just delayed by, you know, half hour or so, and they were able to still party. Trust me, all those Chicago fans were still in the United Center to see that. Some storylines here to be talked about. As soon as the game was over with, and the Lightning got back in the street clothes and did their post-game press conferences and kind of their exit meetings with the press,
We found out their goalie, Ben Bishop, who had missed a game earlier in the series.
And we talked about this.
Yeah, we had talked about it. Big guy, 6'7", 6'8". You know, to play goalie, he's going to have to squat down and use his legs to get low and use those extremities to block pucks. We found out he was playing with a torn groin. Could you imagine doing that in the highest level of hockey, how fast and how quick that game is and how big he is playing in that little goal?
You know, that in as a person who is a former catcher, like I can understand the crouch position, the sliding left to right, blocking, everything like that. I, you know, played a smidgen of goalie and some street hockey and those kind of things.
I bet that was interesting.
Back in the childhood days,
yeah,
right?
I bet that was good.
You can throw a garbage
can. Do they have film of that? Do they have film of that?
You're not going to find that.
Okay.
That's back before those iPhone things existed, right? But what a horrible injury to try to play through. Like, I, you know, was trying to imagine, you know, if you got a little hamstring, okay, not bad. You could probably work your way through it. But groin, like, everything. You want to push left. You want to push right. You want to squat. You want to, you know, try to block a puck. You go down but got to come back up quick.
It all
like,
powers through that
groin. Oh, yeah. Like, that is, like, the central system. And to fully tear it, like, yeah, no wonder the guy missed a game. I mean, we can talk about the toughness of hockey players and what they play through, and it's to no measure against any other sport. These guys play through injury. Like, there's a pain threshold that all sports and athletes play through, but these guys flat out play through injuries. And, you know, I was hearing that after the fact. You knew it had to be something bad for him to sit out, and it was a quote-unquote lower body injury, and you're trying to figure out maybe hamstring, tweak, quad, kind of thing. But to fully tear your groin, I could not imagine getting back out there for, you know, game 4, game 5, and game 6, and really just putting it all out there and selling out for his team. He still played great in goal. And there were times you could see utter discomfort on his face, but he never went back to the bench. He never let it get to him. And he continued to just do everything he could for his team. And he didn't give up any, you know, really soft goals, per se, of just like, what's that guy doing? He didn't even slide over. The only fluky one was coming out to make a play, and him, the defender, and the offensive guy all collide together, and then it was an easy, just empty net kind of slam dunk shot. But I got to give Ben Bishop a lot of props for the guts and what he played through, and unfortunately, his team just could not capitalize on opportunities to score.
And unfortunately, a lot of people are going to remember, you know, 30, 40 years from now, that blunder, Bishop running into the defenseman and the puck squirting out behind them, leaving a wide-open goal for Chicago to score, and ended up being the difference of the game. They lost 2-1.
Yep.
Watched that game 5 in Illinois with a bunch of Blackhawk fans, which was awesome. I think it was really the first time I've watched a hockey game on television with actual real people that understand hockey.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun, and I know a lot. I'm a better fan and know more about hockey than I gave myself credit for, I guess. I was really in tune with their conversations, knew what they were talking about. Not that that has anything to do with the actual Stanley Cup that happened, but I thought it was interesting to point out, and I really found myself enjoying watching the game. It made me want to watch last night's game. And kept me that much more interested in it because of the feeling I had with watching it with real hockey fans.
Right.
And I just was happened to be blessed to be in the state and the area of a team that was favored to win the Cup and was winning the Cup. Speaking of favored to win the Cup and win the Cup, you and I both did pick the Chicago Blackhawks to
in
win.
In how many games?
6 games.
Woo-hoo.
And that's what they did. They won in 6 games. So great job for us there. And then, but, you know, 30, 40 years from now, people are going to remember that play by Bishop. Not a lot of people are going to remember the injury because the old saying is true. You know, if you're out there, you should be, you know, fully able to go, no excuses. As Vince Vaughn likes to say, who is a Blackhawks fan, rule number 76, no excuses, play like a champion. Okay, so now we're going to get into a little game that you and I like to play called Chin Music. Okay, so Chin Music, for those of you who don't know, we like to bring up a baseball topic or two and throw them at each other, high and tight. It could be meant to argue back and forth, or it could be just meant to get our point across. But we're bringing it high and tight, quick, just like a pitcher, brushing a guy back from the plate. Matt, start us off.
All right. I got two. Okay. So don't cut me off after the first one. I know you're going to because you get really excited.
Yes. Philadelphia, you know me too well.
I do. The Philadelphia Phillies, they are 22-43. They have a minus 95 run differential and are now 1-9 in their last. This team is horrible. They have a confused roster of aging veterans like Utley and Howard, who are both 35 and 36 respectively, hitting a grand total of Utley 187 and Howard 230, collectively making up $35 million on their payroll, and a bunch of young guys who are just quote-unquote prospects who can't really play, MLB contracts are fully guaranteed. They can't do anything. They can't trade these guys. They can't cut these guys. There's nothing this team can do. The Phillies are in deep trouble, and this team is going to be bad for a long time to come. And so, Phillies fans, I'm really sorry that you invested. You had a good run with Rollins, Utley, and Howard for years there. You tried to bring in Halliday, Lee, and lock up Hamels to be great front line. But now you're paying the piper of signing all those guys to huge contracts. You got lucky that Roy Halliday up and retired and isn't still collecting $15, $20 million a year from you just because he has arm injuries. But now you got Cliff Lee still on the DL. They're trying to trade Hamels just to get some talent back because this team is in dire straits.
I like it. That's good. Ryan Howard. I love Ryan Howard. So continue on with your next point.
Just for you. All right. We're going to play a little game. Pitcher A or B here. Okay?
Do I get to answer?
You get. This is interactive.
Okay.
So you playing at home as well. Take some notes here and feel free to give your vote as well. Pitcher A has started 13 games. Has a 171 ERA, 84 innings, 93 strikeouts, and opponents are hitting 234 against him.
Mm-hmm.
Pitcher B has started 13 games as well, has a 189 ERA, 85 innings, 74 strikeouts, and opponents are hitting 233. Zach, which pitcher would you say in a vacuum is better right now?
I don't know who I would say is better because are you considering their win-loss record as better? Or, I mean, their numbers are very similar. They got very similar numbers, and I think I know who the two guys are. Felix Hernandez and Max Scherzer.
No.
Dang it.
That's all right. It's a good guess, though. So I would probably pick, if it were me, probably pitcher A.
Yes.
A little bit higher in strikeouts, a little lower ERA in a vacuum, right? Pitcher A is Gerrit Cole, Pittsburgh Pirates.
Okay.
He's 10-2. Pitcher B is A.J. Burnett.
Pirates.
Of the Pirates. And he's 6-2.
And he's like 70 years old.
Yes, he's been in MLB for 16 years. But looking at those stats, would you say that Gerrit Cole was 4 wins better? So my high and tight, don't get fooled by wins and losses. It's easy to get sucked into, oh, he doesn't have as many wins, or oh, he's got so many wins. Wins is a product of luck on when your offensive team scores runs, not necessarily by how you're pitching, because in theory, those two guys could both have 10 wins if they both pitched lights out. Those are my high and tight.
Like it, that could be said for Max Scherzer because he doesn't have near as many wins as some of the other pitchers, but his numbers are off the charts. And you built that argument just like a true Felix Hernandez fan of the Mariners.
He's still leading.
Well, I'm talking about in the past, though.
All right.
He's been the best pitcher in baseball. And he can't get wins, and that's not his fault. So my team is bringing hindsight here. Heard something this weekend, and it struck me as weird at first, and I got to thinking about it. It makes sense. Okay. The single-A home run derby contest this year will be done backwards. Zach, what do you mean backwards? And how do you do home run derby backwards? Well, the batter will be standing at the center field fence, using that as his backstop, and will be hitting towards the grandstands of fans behind the backstop, hitting it directly, you know, pulls a home run as a right-hander, goes out in foul territory, that's a short home run. Same thing with left-hander, goes opposite, goes up over the top of the backstop for a home run deep, same distance there. You got to think, that's stupid. Why would they do that? This is a professional baseball player. Well, single-A players are not but 17 to 19 years old. These guys aren't going to be crushing 25, 30 home runs, cranking them out at a home run derby. They're going to hit 2 to 3 at the most is what the average is, they say, for the single-A home run derby contest. They're going to set up points. You hit certain things, you can get points. Hit it out of a certain fence, you get certain points, things like that.
Yeah.
They will give an overall home run champion and overall point champion in this contest and have it be very interactive and just different. And it's a great marketing ploy because people, like just like you and I, just bid onto it, are going to be talking about it and may get more and more people to come out to the actual event. And then also another thing, interesting to point for Chin Music High and Tight baseball topic, there was a no-hitter thrown in baseball last week.
When?
I don't even remember the day because it must have been Thursday night because it's when the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors were playing the NBA Finals game. He threw it against the Mets, which the Mets had a terrible week last week. And he was for the Giants. I forget his name even. And he threw a no-hitter, and no one even knew about it because the NBA Finals were on, because the NBA Finals are dominating in ratings like you projected, like you predicted. And the kid went out and had his first outing since, and he got chased after like 5.5 innings. So,
yeah,
so we'll grab our last break of the day here, and we'll come back and we'll do draw a line in the sand brought to us by readaboutit.com, and then we'll call our shot. We'll get on out of here and let you guys go watch the basketball game because I know that's what Matt and I want to do.
I want to go to Iowa State so I can study human diseases and how to make people healthier. Maybe I'll try photojournalism. Whatever my adventure becomes, it sounds awesome.
Enjoy your adventure at Iowa State. Visit ChooseYourAdventure.net.
Everybody, welcome back into the Big Show with Matt and Zach. I'm Zach Spears. That's Matt Ampson, bringing you some sports talk radio from the water cooler at work to your radio. That's what we do here. All the stuff that's hot at work, we come bring it to you on the radio. Now, get into the final part of our show where we like to draw a line in the sand. We throw topics at each other, and we have to quickly decide with a quick opinion or however we want to decide what side of the line we want to stand on. Today, we have three topics that we will quickly discuss. Draw a line in the sand. Matt, you'll choose one side. If I agree with you, I'll stay on that side with you. If not, I'll step across and we will agree to disagree. So draw a line in the sand is brought to us by readaboutit.com. Go there and visit. He's got books on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The Great East Texas Trailer Park Escape. I've read it. It's hilarious. I love that book. Shout out to Reed for helping us out with everything on the show every single week and sponsoring this bit. Topic number one. Should LeBron win the MVP of this 2015 NBA Finals, even if they lose the series?
I'm going to jump on the side of no. I think, you know, similarly we've talked about a lot of MVP things, I think winning it does matter. I think Curry showing up in Game 5 the way he did helped push that just enough to where he did turn the series to where he was back in control with it. He has been the babyface killer, and I think he will go ahead and secure that. Iguodala, I think, actually has been probably the difference maker for that entire team, but they're not sexy stats with what he's doing on defense and his hustle work. I think this goes to a Golden State player.
So, Matt, you have him saying no, thinking if Golden State wins the series, that a Golden State player will win it. I'm going to stay over here and say yes. I think he should. He won't, but I think that he should.
All right.
That's
a cop-out answer.
Only four people have scored 40-plus points in three NBA Finals games in the same series. That's Shaq, Jerry West, Rick Barry, and the Michael Jordan. LeBron is averaging 37 points per game, 12.5 rebounds, and 9 assists. And he's also averaging 45 minutes and 33 seconds per game in these NBA Finals. He's the only reason this series is still on television, still playing. Literally, you take LeBron James off this team, it's a team that's picking in the top five of the NBA draft last year. Because, oh wait, they picked number one in the NBA draft last year, the same exact team without LeBron James. They even had Kyrie Irving on that team. LeBron James is making it ever more evident every single time that he steps on the floor, but even more when he steps off the floor. We mentioned it earlier. He took the final 2 minutes of the third quarter off, and the thing went to shambles and really lost the basketball game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron needs to stay on the floor as much as possible tonight in Game 6 for them to have a chance to win. And I will say this, as far as him having a shot to win the NBA Finals MVP, he has to have a LeBron game tonight. Big-time numbers all across the board tonight, and they have to win. And if they lose the series and he wins the MVP, he's going to have to get them to 7, and he's going to have to play well in Game 6 and Game 7, like really, really well in Game 6 and Game 7. Lose Game 7, that's the only way I see LeBron James winning the NBA Finals MVP, but I say yes, he should win the MVP of the 2015 NBA Finals if they do lose, given those numbers.
All right.
Now, number two, is Dez Bryant, the Dallas Cowboys wide receiver, is he bluffing on not playing the first 1 to 2 games of the 2015 NFL season if he doesn't come to terms of a contract that he likes with the Dallas Cowboys?
Yes, 100%.
He's bluffing?
Yes.
He even came out and said he wasn't bluffing, that the reports are actually true.
Get out of here. You can say, I'm going to do it. You push comes to shove. What date did he set the decision has to be made by?
July 15th, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's real serious. Like, the season's not two months away.
That's a month from yesterday.
Yeah, two months away from July 15th. But I'm going to decide if I'm showing up to that game or not. Like, come on, man. Like, now you're just posturing and just throwing jargon out there to try to get Jerry to open up his wallet a little bit more. I would say absolutely he's bluffing. There's no way Dez Bryant would sit out a game because he's only going to hurt himself and the perpetual, you know, persona that everyone's catered him into, this bad guy, this drama queen, a whiner on the sideline, a character issue on and off the field, and we shouldn't pay him big bucks. Now you sit out games, come on, you ain't going to do yourself any favors.
So you have, Matt, you have Dez as bluffing for missing these first one, two games if he doesn't have the contract that he likes. I say he's not bluffing.
What?
Because I've seen this happen before as a Cowboys fan. Emmitt Smith did this after they won the first Super Bowl. Emmitt Smith didn't have the contract he liked. He held out a game one, they got killed. He held out a game two, they got killed. He didn't come to training camp or anything. Finally, Jerry Jones came crawling back, opened up his checkbook, and decided to pay him whatever he wanted. I think Dez Bryant knows that and also just knows the structure of the situation. And they know that Dez Bryant loves football and wants to be a Dallas Cowboy, and this money is going to pay off in the long run. Unless Dez Bryant gets a contract that he likes or something crazy happens and they can throw something into that franchise tag that they have laying out there for him to sign that he's yet to sign, I think Dez Bryant does hold out 1 to 2 games. So our last drawing the line in the sand, you choose which side you want to be on. Do you blame the cameraman for being too close and busting LeBron's head? Is the cameraman at fault? Now, quickly, that happened in game four in Cleveland. LeBron overreacted to a foul, I think, and lost his balance in the act of that and fell into a cameraman who was sitting courtside working for ABC, getting the fans the footage that we need to see and we want to see and we pay to see. LeBron bust his head, needed a few stitches to clear that up, and really affected the game. Is the cameraman at fault?
I am not going to blame the person behind the camera, so the entity of the cameraman, because his job is not to, see somebody falling down, let me jump out of the way. I think he's a victim of you're supposed to shoot one person, one angle, the rim, shoot the action, and stay there, and he's probably just a victim of not being able to move fast. If we want to blame anybody, it's got to be the NBA for where they've drawn that line of how close they can sit, but I am not blaming the cameraman for the incident that occurred.
I'm not blaming the cameraman either, because as a guy who was worked in sports television and actually had to film games and get camera shots, you really get lost in what you're doing there. I've seen it many times on television. I've done it before. I've luckily never been injured in videoing a sporting event, but I've seen it tons of times. I've had people standing next to me get injured. You're watching it through the lens. You're focused on your job, what you're being paid there to do, getting the shot that you want, and you don't really realize that the player's coming towards you. You're focusing on getting that shot or for whatever the case may be, you think they may not roll up on you, and they eventually do. Stuff like that happens all the time. Can it be prevented? Probably. But that's what 2015 is, having these cameramen courtside with their HD cameras, getting these shots that we all want and need. If LeBron doesn't get hurt there, that's an awesome shot of LeBron's crashing into the cameras, and it's something that we're shown over and over again for the next 60 years of that shot. LeBron giving it his all in the series, in the NBA Finals, where he was the only one out there and averaged 40 points a game. So, no, I'm not blaming the cameraman for that. So,
great pick. Great pick, Zach.
So we agreed on one of them. Now we'll call our shot, and we'll get out of here. So, keeping the basketball theme here for calling my shot, by the way, that was LeBron James singing the Calling Your Shot song there with Al Fats. Paul Wall's actually in that song too. I love that song. But shout out to LeBron for helping us out with the audio drop there.
Good boy.
Yeah, so call or shot. I'm going to keep the basketball theme here. I say that LeBron wins the MVP of this series, win or lose. Now, I was on a roll coming into this week. But last week I predicted, I believe I had my last three correct, And I predicted this past week that when we came on air today that both the NHL Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals would still be playing. The NBA Finals are still playing. May not be for much longer after this show is done, but the Stanley Cup finished last night. But I have to be okay with that because my prediction was correct with the Stanley Cup Finals of lasting six games, and I predicted Golden State to win the NBA Finals in six games, which would end tonight, although I want LeBron to win. So that's my shot. I say that LeBron James, if they lose this series, he wins the MVP.
Okay. Let me give you mine. I got Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, final pairing on Sunday at the U.S. Open, with Rory winning the U.S. Open. Two long bombers, guys that are both playing pretty well coming into this. If it favors long-hitting guys, I'd love to see these two battling it out in the beautiful city of Seattle, yeah. Washington.
Awesome. You're home. You should go back up for that.
I would have been there if I wasn't in this shithole of Tropical Storm
yes.
Bill or whatever the hell you call
Tropical
it.
Tropical Storm Bill, as it's rolling through here with minimal rain. Hopefully everyone stays safe out there. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. Make sure you also listen to our podcast on the ZSRN. Subscribe on iTunes and follow us all on Twitter. Everyone have a great week. Stay positive, be safe, and peace. Worry about your followers, you need to get your dollars up. Yeah, I'm tired of giving advice. Sometimes I look outside to see just am I living my life right. Electrifying rappers brought my gas to the night fight. Who gon' win? It's obvious we all gon' sin, but I'm gone. Yeah, hey, so I'm gone.